little hip hop. The hip it of a hip hip hop. You don't stop. Rap, 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 rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
Wrap it up.
That's a wrap. This is what we do every Friday, is I have a couple of friends here in studio and we talk about the things that happened this week in Pensacola, Florida, or national politics or international politics, you know, whatever the case may be. David Baer is joining me this week. I think the official title he wanted me to use was Local Dude.
For me.
Local dude. Okay, very, very good. David Baer, local dude. Christian Wagley, also local dude, but officially he works with Healthy Gulf here in the Panhandle. Right, Christian?
That's it. Yeah.
All right.
Happy to
it's
be
radio,
here.
You got to talk.
Sorry. Yeah. I'm just looking at you making eye contact. I thought eye contact was enough.
I'll tell you a side story. I love having people in studio. This rap thing is actually kind of fun. It's working out even better than I expected, frankly. But I really prefer to do radio interviews. And the simple reason, phone interviews. The reason is because, you know, it's all the communication between me and the guests, the audience gets to hear. And so when you're in studio, you know, I've gotten so used to doing radio stuff or telephone interviews that I almost don't know how to have people in studio. Like, I've forgotten how to be a normal person in a conversation because it's all over the phone. All right. So let's just take one second and give people a taste of kind of who you guys are. David, I know you do a lot of different things, but what's something that you're involved in right now that you want to let people know about?
I work at the Lewis Baer Company. We're a wholesale beverage distributor across the panhandle of Florida.
Where every once in a while you guys give away money.
We do that
a little
sometime.
Bit here and there.
Our family foundation.
A 10 or a 20 here or there.
Yes.
$4.5 million to Baptist Hospital last week.
Yes. That was a big check. new campus is going to be a great opportunity for our community, but redevelopment of their old campus, I think, is going to be the bigger deal.
Yeah, and that, I think, is still at the, well, we'll see sort of phase. I mean, a lot of people have kind of talked about it, but unless you know something, it's all been largely speculative because the transition is still, you know, years away, or what, 2 years away, I guess. But that's something you got to start planning for now, right?
Right, right. As far as I understand, they're going to hire some consultants to help them study what's feasible, what is the best, in the best interest of that community, what's in the best interest for them economically. Also, they're willing to give away the property, I believe, if it makes sense for the community and that community specifically.
And, you know, as we know from the old medical facility on Palafox, medical facilities are not exactly the easiest to convert to something else useful.
Right.
You know, even if they're in decent shape, and not that one in Palafox is, but, you know, they're relatively single-purpose facilities, and making them something else is not... Plus, I don't know if anybody... Would you want to turn that into, like, an apartment complex?
Who knows?
Weird.
But it's 50 acres of property
it's
they
huge,
have.
Yeah.
And then if Lakeview decides to move, you know, they divested Lakeview. If they decide to move, there's another 25 acres there.
It's an enormous amount of property. Yeah, absolutely. Christian, you people probably think of you as the water and climate guy, as that's the environmental guy, if you will, which I hope they think of me as the environmental guy, too, but more so you. That's more so your domain. Tell folks something that you're working on or something's happening right now.
Yeah, we've been making some good progress with the city of Pensacola and getting them to make some commitments on switching to renewable energy. That's a big, transition going on in our nation. And so we've got a great city council now. They passed that last spring, and we're just continuing to follow them and make sure that they're, honoring those commitments and moving the city toward clean energy. And then also acting on, they did a great vulnerability study looking at some areas of downtown that are going to really go underwater in the decades ahead. So the staff has done a great job of giving them some of the tools they need to make good decisions into the future. And I think we've got a great city council to look at those things and make some decisions for our future. So.
Yeah, I know the mayor gave a briefing, the guy who's overseeing the renewable energy project in Pensacola gave a briefing this last week and talked about solar panels on, you know, rooftops, which is more complicated than you think because some buildings are, getting past their usable life. Some roofs just, they're not in the right place. There's trees in the way, or maybe not now, but in 5 years there will be. And then some roofs, frankly, just aren't strong enough, to handle solar panels. So looking at that, from your perspective, I asked this question, they weren't really, they didn't have a number yet, but if you had to take a guess of the amount of energy that the city of Pensacola uses in those buildings, what percentage do you think is really feasibly going to be able to convert it over to solar? Do you have any, like, even wild guess about something like that?
So for the city to be able to make its own energy on site?
At least for those buildings.
Yeah, so the city does have a lot of buildings that are wide open. They've got a lot of warehouse-type buildings, obviously, mm-hmm. To support vehicles and maintenance and all that stuff. They've got a huge warehouse complex. It's flat metal roofs. It's perfect. There's no shade on it. Those buildings, whether they can support solar or not yet, because of the structural things, they're going to be looking into that, obviously.
You'd have the problem of getting the energy at a building like that, which might be a fleet, housing area, to somewhere else where they actually use the energy. That's not the easiest thing in the world, too.
Yeah, no, you would mainly use it right there on site. You wouldn't move it around. That's not necessarily easy to do. The airport's another huge opportunity. You've got a bunch of flat open buildings. You've got a bunch of flat grass areas. There are a number of other airports that have used all that space.
Softly Field's converted over.
Land is such a valuable resource, and you want to try to do more than one thing with it. So if you're just looking at grass that has to be mowed every week, if you can put something else there. So there's tremendous opportunity at the airport as well. For that. So.
I think one of the other things, Christian, you're talking about is this Gulf Power study, right? To look at the possibility of turning electricity into an enterprise like the port, like Pensacola Energy, like the airport. It got brushed aside the first pass, but I think it's going to come back. Do either of you think this is really a feasible future alternative for us, David?
I do not. I don't think so, because I think these utilities do what they do in our area because they have scale. I mean, Gulf Power was Southern Company, which, was all around the South. Obviously not all of Florida, but now NextEra is huge. I mean, they're one of the largest in the world, and they have the scale to be able to do what they do at a cost-effective rate to the ratepayers. And so I think the city's going to have to do some major bonding to buy it. I mean, Gulf Power is not just going to hand over their assets.
Right.
And if they don't produce their own energy here, they're going to have to buy the energy. So whether they join a regional co-op or buy it directly from Gulf Power, they're still going to have to pay Gulf Power to the transmission line access to bring it to them. And so, I mean, I think there's a huge cost, and I don't know that the city has the bonding depth. I don't know that they can maintain the facility. I mean, we have some aging gas pipes that are issues in our system. And is government the most efficient way to manage those types of things? And it's only about the city of Pensacola. It's not all of Escambia County. It's not Gulf Breeze. It's not. I mean, so their size is very small, and that kind of cost, they can't share it among a larger region. And
right.
So that's my biggest concern.
And the mayor actually brought up a point I hadn't even been considering. I suppose it's surmountable, but the weirdness of the boundaries of Pensacola City versus Escambia County means that you have to basically figure out that this block is going to be Gulf Power still, and that block is going to be, on city sourced power, if that ever comes to that. Now, Christian, when I think about this idea, the analogy that comes to my mind is, imagine if what we decided as a city is, we're just tired of getting our gasoline from these big companies, and we're going to make our own refinery so that we can have better reliable gas. I mean, just it seems so impossible as a possibility. I guess you can buy power, like David said, over the grid from other suppliers, but you've kind of been shepherding this or spearheading this. What's your thought on the possibility of us being an enterprise for power?
Well, first of all, the gasoline is not a good example, because what we're dealing with now is a monopoly. You've basically got a company that acts like government. They've been given an exclusive right. They don't compete. Almost anything else we buy at a competitive marketplace where we can choose the best product, that's best for us. Mm-hmm. So it's basically Gulf Power is acting sort of like government with no really recourse to the people. The people really don't have access to their decision making the way we do with the Escambia County Commission or, the Pensacola City Council or any elected body. There's something like 33 municipal electric utilities already in Florida. I believe there most of them, if not all of their rates are lower than Gulf Power from what we looked at already. Feasible. Now, does it make sense for Pensacola? You got to do a feasibility study and find out.
Do these other existing ones, do they manufacture their own electricity or do they acquire it from some other source?
There's both. Some make their own.
That's because that's where the gas analogy came to me. I'm trying to imagine on the west side of Pensacola, we're going to have a power plant. That's the part that I can't wrap my brain around.
Yeah, most likely not. The city could certainly accelerate the installation of solar on its own facilities and properties and places to take up some of that load. But typically they would buy in the marketplace. Electrons get moved all over the country and they buy. I mean, Gulf Power right now buys wind energy out of Oklahoma because it's the cheapest, that they can get. And so that's what a lot of electric utilities do. And so when you do that, then you know, when the city, if the city were to own it, you would remove the need to send profits to shareholders all over the country. And so that's where you can start to, you know, David's point is well made. There's some economies of scale that kick in any kind of business operation. But now you've eliminated the need to make money on this. You just need to break even. And if you make extra money, the residents, the taxpayers can choose how they want that money to be used. We don't have that ability, you know, with Gulf Power.
Yeah, no, and as we know, you know, Gulf Power has kind of pushed back a little bit on this and certainly behind the scenes. And, you know, they even had the undergrounding thing that happened this week. You read that how you will. It's a good move. It's an interesting story. But why now? You know, it's a fair question to raise, I think. 8:46 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I've got David Baer in studio with me and Christian Wagley. It's The Wrap. We'll be back in just a moment. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay, joined in studio by David Baer, officially known as Local Dude. And I work at the Lewis Baer Company. That's so funny. And Christian Wagley with Healthy Gulf. By the way, just as a total side note, I try not to have officials on this because elected officials get all their airtime anyway, and people sometimes who are in like positions sometimes have to represent their position, and so I want people who can just kind of say whatever they think. Which, David, I've never known you to have a problem saying what you think.
No, I will not hold back.
Which is good. And Christian, same thing as well. So I appreciate that. You were in the break just telling me something that I guess I didn't realize, and so thank you. The offshore drilling moratorium ends when?
Yeah, this coming June of 2022. Now, this is the federal congressional moratorium that was passed all the way back in 2006. You know, the state's already well protected, you know, 9 miles out of state waters. But beyond that, the federal waters, that moratorium actually ends this coming June. It always seemed like it was years away because it's been in effect for like 15 years.
Yeah.
But it's actually coming upon us now. And there is a bill in Congress to actually make it permanent. Don't know if it's going to happen, but
okay. Wow. Okay. Yeah. I did not live here during the spill. I mean, we know about the spill from, it was obviously a national news story, but you know, both of you guys I know did live here at that time. I mean, David, when you hear that, like you're big into tourism, obviously big into economic development here, and certainly business interests as well. The idea that there would be an end of a moratorium on new drilling for something like that, even the thought of it just gives me the heebie-jeebies. Am I wrong?
No, I feel the same way. It's it's frightening. I mean, it's such a threat to our area, you know, because it happens. It will happen. Eventually, there will be oil leaks. There will be pipe breaks. That it's just part of the nature of the beast. And when that happens and it washes on our shores, economically, it crushed us in this area. It crushed a lot of businesses. It crushed a lot of families who were working for those businesses that had to shut down. Our tourism came to a screeching halt. Our environment, I'll leave that to Christian to talk about, but it's a horrible thing. And so if we can get this permanent moratorium, I mean, this would be the win-win for the area. But there's also this additional piece about our military bases. I mean, we're on the waterfront. We have these flight patterns. And if they have these, these oil drills,
range, yeah. Right? Yeah.
I mean, it's bad news. I mean, it hurts us economically way farther than anyone can really dream.
And it's, you know, it, weirdly, because of the current administration, I would think we have a more optimistic chance of getting this issue. Although it's clearly, from Floridians' perspective, the Republicans and the Democrats are on the same page, you know, for different reasons maybe, but certainly we see the tourism impact. Certainly we see the military benefit of it. And it's one of those weird issues where, hey, we can all be on the same page. Let's just get this done, right?
At least in Florida, we're definitely on the same page. But, you know, to get it through Congress, it's got to, you know, everybody all over the country's got to vote for it. And you've got states that are not coastal states that don't see these issues the same way. And, you know, they're looking at, I guess, what they think of as cheap access to cheap energy.
Right.
But Florida's been very good. And, you know, our elected officials at every, you know, all both parties and everybody's really been unified against it. Because as David said, it's a direct threat to really our way of life, the path we chose. The other states in the Gulf chose different, you know, made different choices for their coastline. We chose to maintain these beautiful sandy beaches and that emerald water, and we've got to keep drilling away to maintain that.
And that looks smarter and smarter at every time we get a chance to measure it. David, we just had the Visit Pensacola big annual meeting out at the Hilton, Pensacola Beach, where we found out record-breaking, I mean absolutely record-shattering collection of bed taxes, right?
Absolutely. $17.6 million in 2021.
And we saw a down year, right?
Right.
In the COVID year was not good.
It was about just shy of $10 million.
But this year has rebounded tremendously. And, you know, it's interesting. I was just talking to somebody yesterday. We were actually at Sweet Seasons Farms in Santa Rosa because of Leadership Santa Rosa for their Agriculture Day. And he made a comment. He said that, and this is, nobody ever talks about this. Their business has done great because of COVID, because it's an outdoor activity. I mean, it was a little down for a couple of things, but for the most part, it's just amazing because people want to get out and do stuff. In Florida, they're allowed to get out and do stuff. And there are a lot of sectors of the economy that boomed during COVID. And we always kind of perceive it as if everybody suffered, and there has been a lot of suffering. But there's also been a lot of places where it's just been doing great, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just depends on the industry, but if you're commercial real estate, like office space real estate, you're probably hurting right now,
mm-hmm.
or you're getting ready to hurt because people have been learning to work from home and they're not going to return to the workplace. So a lot of businesses have found that it's much more efficient for them. And so if they're renting space, they're going to be, you know, ending at their rentals.
Yeah.
You know? And so it just depends on who you are. But individuals, there's a lot of people in restaurants and bars, I can tell you, that were shut down. Those businesses, those business owners suffered, but all their employees suffered also. Fortunately, there was the PPP loan, and a lot of those folks were able to retain their employees and cover them and did the right thing. But there's some folks that just couldn't do that, and those employees all suffered too.
I'm actually kind of curious. I hadn't thought about it, but because of your unique position with the distributorship, you know, we heard a lot of stories about how farm producers, they were producing, you know, they were dumping milk on the fields because the restaurant side of the supply chain wasn't taking any anymore because the restaurants were shut down. Meanwhile, we had milk shortages on the grocery store side because those farmers couldn't produce enough because everybody was staying home. And, for example, milk, food, another one of these things where, you know, the restaurants were, they didn't need it, obviously, on the other side. But you, as in beer distributorship, I'm curious how it's affected you overall, because restaurants weren't taking it, but people, I assume, were drinking a lot more at home.
They were. Our overall sales were up. I mean, so if you look at it as two divisions, the on-premise versus the off-premise, mm-hmm. drinking it on the premises of the retailer or off the premises. The on-premise was shut down for a period of time, and we retained all our employees and shifted them to help, because all of a sudden the grocery stores and the mass merchandise stores like Walmart's, et cetera, just started, you know, just volume was just flushing through, mm-hmm. and they started having, you know, there was empty shelves of toilet paper, and the grocery stores were saying, fill it up with beer. You know, we have customers, and we can't keep enough on the shelf to stock it. So our sales were up, and it's weird because it's recovering. The on-premise is recovering, but like draft, I mean, our keg sales stopped, and we had a bunch of inventory that went bad.
Wow, I believe it.
So we had to take a loss on that, but you know, the increase in sales covered our expense, and you know, and we may do, but it's just weird coming out of it. How it's they're open, but they're not quite fully recovered, mm-hmm. and the on-premise, I mean, the off-premise business is still, you know, accelerating. It's still up over prior year, but it's, you know, it's kind of coming back, normalizing.
A little bit more equalizing, yeah.
So we'll, over time, we have to see what happens with the on-premise business, with people really wanting to go out.
I'm a little bit sad over here thinking about the expiring beer in the kegs, and could we not have found a way?
Yeah. Well, we tried. So we actually bought
Hold on for just a second, David. I want to hear, because I'm curious now, but back to David Barron, Christian Wagley. David, I interrupted you mid-story.
Oh, okay.
How did you guys try to solve the, oh my God, we have too many full kegs, the problem everyone wants, right?
Right. So we bought some containers to go that we sold to the retailers, and a lot of them bought from other sources also, so that they could, the kegs they had tapped, they would sell, they'd fill them up and sell them to go, because even
like sort of like growlers?
Yeah, like growlers.
Okay.
Yeah, and plastic containers and other things that were sealable.
Got it.
So the governor, while he shut down the on-premise business, he allowed to go orders. And so those folks, in order for them to try to, you know, save their space, save their business, were doing everything they could. And so we were trying to help them, you know, get rid of the inventory they had, and there were some of them that got rid of that inventory and bought more from us. So we were able to sell some of those kegs, but we took a big loss.
Interesting. Now, Christian, I'm just because during COVID, the changing in people's habits, first of all, everybody staying in, although not as much in Florida because we never had a true shutdown, but then getting back out, have you seen an effect of that on the ability to do environmental management, remediation? You know, it's kind of like you can't resurface the parking lot when people are parking on it, but if nobody's coming to the store, maybe you take advantage. Has there been anything like that for the stuff that you see?
I would probably comment on that more from kind of the organizing side of things in terms of, you know, you're trying to get people together to solve a problem in a community and engage them on it. And so in the past, we always had, a meeting somewhere. Everybody comes in person and we talk about it. Now, you know, with having to learn how to do Zoom, that's been an incredible thing where everybody can just stay at home. They don't have to. It's much more convenient for people for that sort of thing. I think if you're doing like brainstorming kind of things where you're doing that creative side, where you're really trying to hash out something, it's probably best to do that in person. But I think going forward, we've learned these new skills of, you know, virtual meetings, and that's a permanent thing, I think. And there's a lot of, you know, benefits that come from that. The other thing that happened environmentally is we saw some things where when people weren't driving, they weren't flying, they weren't doing certain things, how some of the environment recovered and reacted to that. You know, there's studies showing, you know, that when the ocean was quieter, you know, whales could hear each other better and communicate, and they actually were less stressed. They actually know this by, they actually pick up their poop, so they can measure their poop, and they know from stress hormones. This is how they measure it. You're going to ask, you know, how do they measure
whale
that?
Whale poop,
they measure
stress hormones, and COVID. But the world got quieter
when we were staying at home. The world got quieter, and the nature kind of responded to that in different ways, and that was interesting. You know, there's places where the water's cleared up because the cruise ships weren't coming in and stirring up the
interesting. You know, the bottom.
And those are kind of interesting things how nature has responded to some of that.
So from kegs going to waste to whale poop and tranquility hormone. I love it. I mean, I never know what I'm going to learn from you guys. This is so much fun. David Bear, guy around town, and Christian Wagley with Elko Healthy Gulf. Gentlemen, thanks so much for the time. Thanks for what you do in the community. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Andrew.